Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the d'Amico International Shipping first quarter 2018 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Marco Fiori, CEO of d'Amico. Please go ahead, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our first quarter 2018. Just to give you a brief overview, first quarter has closed, we didn't expect to be in the black, it's closed in the red, but however it's been much better than what we expected, and we'll see why. Anyhow, starting our thing on page 4, we had a loss of 3.6 million in Q1 18. In Q1 17, just comparing quarter by quarter, we had a profit of 1.8 million. But this was affected by 2.7 million of asset disposals on two ships of benefit. So the ordinary part of business was kind of similar. You'll see later on that we did Q1 has been much better than Q2, Q3, and Q4 of 2017, which is kind of important after we look at that. Vessel disposal and sale is back. We finalized the lease back of one MR vessel and the TC back of another one, and we generated a profit of 20.3 million. This has been in our policy of improving liquidity, so there was also this transaction. Our spot TC has been of 12,726, which is slightly below what we achieved in Q1 17, 13,363, but substantially higher than what we did in Q2, Q3, and Q4 of last year, which the average was 11,677. So we're really over $1,000 per day better than the three previous quarters. The coverage of TC has been 31.7, with an average rate of 15,000 more or less dollar per day. This has been helping us to get to improve the spot results, and as a matter of fact, the total spot results average has been at 13,446. Last year, in Q1 2017, the same number was 14,412, so it is $1,000 less. Market fundamentals are not very changed from last time. We are continuing with few orders, a lot of acceleration of the demolition. And what's interesting, we've been able to do some TC rates of around $15,000 per day, which at these levels, we've been renewing some ships. At these levels, they are positively accreting numbers because it's above our break-even. Vessel employment, we fixed five vessels on TC, four MRs for 12 to 32 months, plus three of the extension of these vessels with charters, and a profitable rate. And among these ships, there are the plus $15,000 a day. We can go ahead on page 5. We can go very fast on this one because this is normal. It gives you our fleet list. It's always 55.5 ships, all IMO classified, all approved, vetted, so on and so forth. So you can still see that we are still a major operator of MR ships. As a matter of fact, out of the 55.5 ships, 43.5 are vessels in the MR group. Page 7. On page 7, MRTC and spot rates and historical MR values, very similar to what we've seen for year-end, same charts, but you can start seeing that there is a slow movement in new buildings, just slowly upticking up in this recent period, which is a good thing because it tends to prove our our value of the fleet, net of debt, and we see that this is a number that's kind of important also for our compliance with our covenants, which is moving dramatically in our favor. I would like to remind you that in all these years that we had a difficult market, we have never been in breach of covenants on any of our covenants. So if somebody wants to ask this question later on, we never had a breach of covenants on our loans. So we've always been in compliance. Page eight, you can see the difference between 1 year conventional non-eco rates, 13.7, and just to remind you that for eco ships, the same number for 1 year eco ships, we're talking about 15,000 plus. 5 year old MR values, moving from 25 to 26.5. But this move is due to the fact that now, for the first time going backwards 5 years, you start having also eco ships included in this number. So there is, you're comparing apple and oranges compared to the previous quarter, the same number. Because now, for the first time, you start having eco ships coming into the picture. Page 9 on the general trend, the helicopter view on the market. Seaborne refined products, you know this chart, been growing at a CAGR of 4%, and the product share of oil seaborne trade has been moving on the product side from 25% to 35%, so this remains kind of stable. Page 10, stocks and throughput of refineries. Mainly the key number here we think is the stock to look. As you can see, there's been a dramatically winding down of stocks. If you look from the peak of Q1 16 to February 18, really it's been a very sharp decrease, which is a good signal to the fact that we are coming out of this indigestion that we had of stocks that were highly stored and was reducing the propensity of shipping them around. So finally, we are denting the high supply of stock. Page 11, growth in refinery capacity and oil demand. I think the main point is the pie chart you have there on the right, where you can see that the Middle East and China, and followed by other Asia, are the segments of growth, of principal growth in the refining sector. And if you refine far away from where you consume, there is always this shifting effect away from Europe of refining, which will oblige Europe to import a lot of its products, which, if you turn to page 12, is the chart on the right side, the bar chart on the right side, where you can see that Europe, also if there was a small uptick, we're always in a decreasing trend of refining capacity. From 2007, we went down considerably. We've been slowing down a lot of the refining. Page 13. On the left, there is a chart that gives you some CapEx estimate of offshore, onshore, and global, how oil companies are investing. So you can start seeing that from the bottom of 2016, there's been a constant rebuilding. So CapEx is starting to continue to grow, actually not start, it's continuing to grow, and driven especially by the onshore in the United States. So the U.S. have been the main leader in this increase in oil supply, which you can see on the right side, the estimated production. You can see that the biggest growth, on one hand, OPEC has been decreasing because they wanted to decrease in order to eliminate this glut out of the market. Instead, U.S. and non-OPEC have been substituting the OPEC reduction, and they've been kind of very active at putting oil on the market. The U.S., just as a note there, is going to be one of the main suppliers of oil in the next year. Also because they're very flexible, now they have lower break-even costs. A lot of the shale production has been already put in place, so it's very simple for them to start the production, cut the production, start the production, depending on global market prices. Page 14, just to give you an idea of where we see the growth and what's happening in the world, we just took one country, that is Brazil. As you remember, Brazil had a big economic crisis, a political crisis, but now they're starting to be back on their feet, and you can see that there has been a dramatic growth of import of products from Brazil, diesel, gasoline, and all kind of other petroleum products. Now, what we are observing in Brazil is the same situation we're observing also in other Latin American countries, due to the fact that they have been cutting down, tapering down the refining capacity. A lot of projects that were supposed to be already online, they have not gone online, so they feel having a growth in the internal market, not having the refining capacity, they have been big importers of products. On this note, I would like to remember that we did started in January. We did a pool agreement with FLOPEC, which is the government of Ecuador oil company for transport, where we started a pool with themselves and Glencore for a pool to import products into Ecuador, which then we can use to optimize routes somewhere else. So this has also been a good factor. Page 14, going on the second prong about what's supporting, in our opinion, the market and will be one of the causes of recovery, it is the delivery and scrapping. You can see that on the historical point, 2017 is a number that we know. The market has been growing net of 2.8%, and when I say net, it is net of the scrapping that has been occurring, which is the yellow line behind the axis. There are some estimates for 18 and 19, and you can see the market growing net of 1.7%, so much slower rates of growth than we had in the past. Kind of a young fleet, but you know, young, but every year that goes by, it is 1 year that the fleet is also good for the scrapping. Continuing to talk about scrapping and deliveries, page 16, you have the numbers for 17 divided by quarters, Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. First observation, you can see that deliveries are being much less or being less than what were the expected deliveries, because there is always a slippage factor, but especially it's in Q1 and Q2, you can see this factor is continuing. So there's going to be slippage from what we people expect is going to happen. On the demolition side, there's the chart under, you can see that in all of 17, there were scrapped 30 ships, and what's very interesting to point out is the fact that in the first quarter of 2018, we have seen scrapping for almost 50%, for over 50% of what were the scrapping of done in 2017. So in the first quarter, we have had more scrapping than in the whole half year of last year. So you can see the deliveries are slowing down, demolition are going up. Page 17, similar thing here, you can see that the order book is going down. For 17, there have been only 73 orders. Year to date, 2018, probably is 4, that's a small bar. So numbers are going down. And on the left side, you can see the new building parity curve showing you that second-hand ships are still more convenient to buy than new buildings. So this would tend also to be one of the mitigating factors for the delivery. The last page here, on page 18, seaborne volume MR LR1 fleet versus 1 year MR LR1 TC. You can see we put together the 1 year LRTC, the 1 year MR rate, fleet growth, and seaborne trade. The main takeout of this chart is the fact that when you see a spike in ton mile and seaborne trade and of MR fleet growth, you see also constantly that subsequently, there is a moment of weakness in the one-year TC market for MRs and LRs. So it's very self-evident that when you see that there's been excess, later on with a slow delay, there is going to be also some rebalancing factors. And now we think we are at the bottom of the cycle for many reasons. We think that the deliveries are going to be slowing down, inventory is down, but especially we saw also after three quarters of negative numbers, we're still in negative term, but we see really an inversion of the trend which was happened in the first, in the last three quarters of last year. So this is one of the positive factors. On benefiting how from the expected market recovery, I think Carlos, as CFO, can give you a much clearer and better picture of all of this.
Thanks, Marco. Hello to everyone. So we start with the usual slide here on the financing side, showing our CapEx, remaining CapEx for the next 2 years up to the end of 2019, $123 million approximately, 66 for the remainder of this year and 57 next year. 63% of the remaining CapEx should be financed with bank debt. The remaining $45 million approximately will be equity that we will have to invest to take delivery of the remaining new buildings. The CAPEX program, when we started it in 2012, was of $755 million, so now we have only $122 left. It's still an important figure, but nonetheless, it is only a small fraction of the initial investments that we undertook to modernize our fleet. If you compare this $45 million to the $48 million we reported in December, you would probably question yourself how come it hasn't decreased more. Given that we invested around $33 million in the quarter, and the explanation is that we are taking now a more conservative view about the LR1 vessel values upon delivery in July this year and January next year. Just as a reminder, we have two LR1s that should be delivered in July this year and another two in January next year, and those are the four remaining LR1s in our new building program. So the reduction in the assumed, the forecasted vessel values that we prudently now are taking into account upon delivery explains why the equity component hasn't fallen more relative to the 31st of December. On the following page, we show on the left-hand side the debt financing cash flows for the next 3 years, almost 3 years, and then on the right-hand side, how the gross debt to fleet market value would change over time. And I will explain now more in detail what are the assumptions of this analysis. On the left-hand side, it's important to note that we don't have any refinancings needs in 18. We do have in 19, however, because of the balloons on two vessels we fully own and four vessels we own in JVs. There are two JVs, the JV with Glencore, two vessels have to be refinanced, and the JV with Mitsubishi for a total of $35 million. We also have some minor refinancing needs of balloons in 2020 of around $70 million. So we are assuming here that these balloons will be refinanced. And we are conservatively not assuming that we would be able to refinance more than only the balloons, the balloon amounts. On the right-hand side, we look again at how the gross debt to fleet market value will change over the following 3 years, starting in, with the end of Q1 figure of 71%. This, of course, doesn't take into account the cash. We have, it's a gross debt, not net debt. We are also not taking into account the recovery in asset value. So we are taking the latest valuation of our fleet, and we are just amortizing that on a straight line basis over the remaining useful life of these vessels. And even with this conservative assumption, if we can generate enough earnings to cover our cash break even, we have quite a fast deleveraging of our balance sheet. Of course, if, as we expect, with the recovery markets in 19 and 20, we can generate more cash than necessary to cover our cash break-even, then the deleveraging will be even faster if when we look at the ratio of net debt to fleet market value. Going on to the following page, we show here what is the coverage, contract coverage for our fleet for the remainder of 18 and 19 and 20. The figure for 2018 rose slightly relative to the last time, our last presentation of the December results. We have fixed 4 MRs in the first quarter of the year at profitable rates. And we have also fixed an additional LR1. We have now of the LR1s on the water. They're all fixed on period contracts. Of the LR1s to be delivered, we have the vessel to be delivered in one of the vessels to be delivered in July, which is fixed at a very profitable contract, and the other one, which we also recently fixed on a contract. So both vessels are also fixed, or both of the other ones to be delivered in July. The only one of the other ones to be delivered in July, however, are taken into account here in the statistics that we are presenting, because the other fixture was closed only a few days ago. The positive thing I would like to stress is that for Eco MR vessels, now we are able, we have fixed in the first quarter of the year vessels at profitable rates. The rates are around $15,000 per day for Eco MR vessels for 1 year periods, and that's slightly above our P&L breakeven. So that is, I believe, very good news. It shows that the charters, which we are chartering our vessels to, which are the oil majors and the main the leading trading commodity trading companies, are quite confident that the market is going to be recovering over the course of the year, and that is why they are also prepared to pay more than what we are earning now on the spot market for these vessels. On the following page, we show our fleet evolution. We have the breakdown of the vessels which are owned and chartered, and of those which are time chartered and bareboat chartered. Overall, we show here a decrease in the average number of vessels that we are going to be controlling. That is because the number of TCN vessels is expected to fall. Of course, this is only a picture in time, which is showing the contracts which are in place today. We are not making an assumption about contract renewal extensions or new contracts that we might be making, but we will be looking to extend the TCN contracts if we can do so at attractive rates, or to take in other vessels on short-term TCs, or even possibly in some cases long-term TCs if we can do it at very attractive rates. Currently, the sensitivity to $1,000 change in the TCE equivalent rate is of around $10 million for the remainder of 2018 and of $15 million for 2019 and around 14.5 for 2020. So it's pretty stable for 2019 and 2020. And that, of course, is a sensitivity on a bottom line basis and also on cash flow generation basis. Going on to the following page, here we show our net financial position at the end of December. It was of 110 million. It is of 526 million as at 31st of March. Our fleet market value rose slightly over the period from 766 million to 776 million. As per slides previously presented by Marco, we are seeing we have seen over the last 12 months quite an important increase in asset values, especially for the younger vessels. The same is not true for the older vessels. However, where asset values have actually been going in the opposite direction. But overall, we saw an increase in market value over the first quarter of this year, as per valuations received by a leading broker, which is also the broker valuing our fleet for our bank covenants. So it is quite a reliable valuation, we believe. The ratio of net financial position to fleet market value over the period remained pretty much stable, increasing from 67 to 68%. As previously mentioned, over the period we had investments of 33 million for installments, mainly relating to installments for vessels under construction, and for the one LR1 which was delivered in the quarter in January this year. We also have investments for the acquisition of a financial leased asset. Of course, this is a transaction which actually generated cash for us, but from an accounting perspective, we also show it as an investment. Overall, we delivered two vessels to their buyers in the first quarter of this year, generating $20 million in net cash up front. One was a sale and time charter back, and one was a sale and lease back, which we have a purchase obligation in the end. Following page, the key line items of our P&L, we show that, of course, the bottom line we already discussed. We lost 3.6 million in the quarter, relative to a loss of a profit of 1.8 million in the first quarter of 2017. 2017 result was, however, affected positively by the disposal of vessels, generating 2.7 million in profit. Therefore, if we excluded that non-recurring item from the 2017 results, and we exclude the result on disposal of vessels accounted for in Q1 18, actually the difference between the bottom line results in the first quarter of this year and the first quarter of 17 is of only $2.9 million. First quarter of 18 was also a much better quarter than any of the last of the previous three quarters on all key P&L line items. We generated a higher EBITDA, a higher EBIT and net result overall. I guess that's the positive take here. If we look in more detail at the results of our vessels on a TCE equivalent basis, we see that in the first quarter of this year, the vessels on the trading spot and on average 12,700 relative to 13,300 in the first quarter of 17 and to 11,300 in the last quarter of 17. So it's a marked improvement relative to the Q4 17 and relative to the last 9 months of 17. It is, however, slightly lower, around $600 per day lower than Q1 17. So it's not that much lower than Q1 17. And nonetheless, we had the lower coverage in Q1 18. We had only 30% of our fleet covered in Q1 18 relative to 40% covered in Q1 17. And also the average rate of the contracts in Q1 17 was higher, 15,900 relative to 15,000 in Q1 18. Therefore, the blended result from the TC and spot vessels in Q1 18 was a 13,400 relative to 14,400 in Q1 17. So $1,000 per day, more or less, less than Q1 17. Finally, if we go on to the following page, we show here the results of our vessels trading on the spot market relative to the Clarkson's average. Not surprisingly, we did better than the Clarkson's average, which doesn't take into account the triangulations that we can perform with our vessels and that all of our competitors do also, and therefore, unsurprisingly, we did better than the Clarkson's average. We also included this time around the result of our eco vessels, which we usually didn't report, just to show that if we look only at these new generation vessels, the results are even better. The vessels on the spot market earned 13,360. We don't have that many vessels which are eco and which are trading on the spot market, so there is more variability to these results than if we look at the whole of our fleet, because we tend to fix, we have tended in the past to fix our eco vessels on period contracts, because those are the vessels which preferred by the oil majors, which we work with for period contracts. If we look, of course, also at the resulting to account our the time charter contracts, then our outperformance relative to the Clarkson's average is even bigger. Finally, if we go on to the following page, we show our NAV evolution. Here we don't have the quarterly breakdown, we have only the year-end figures, but this the NAV bottomed around March last year, and then it has been rising since December last year. It had risen by around 32 million as at December 17, and then there was it was pretty much flat in this last quarter, ending the quarter at around $250 million, so just $5 million less than in December 17. Our shares are currently trading at a quite a big discount to NAV of 31%. And basically that's it. I think those key points from a financial perspective.
Just to conclude all of this, why invest in this today? Most of it we have discounted. We have a fleet of modern ships from top yards, discounted NAV value, first class in-house technical management. We're invested in a very strong segment of the products. You have noticed that also in these years of difficult market, there's not been as much volatility, especially in the MRs. Commercial strategy, we've been doing a strategy of balancing the fleet through also TCs, which gave a little bit more of stability, been reducing volatility also that. Widespread commercial activity through different offices, Stanford, London, Singapore for the commercial side. Banking relationship very strong. Everything is financed on our fleet, and we're missing also some financing. There was good support from all of the banks for finalizing the last financing. So I think that we're just sitting here. We're starting to see a pickup in rates. As I told you, the first quarter of the year has been much better than the second, third, and fourth quarter of last year, but way better. Our spot rate has been over $1,000 above what was the average in these quarters. So we think we're feeling that this is a little bit the bottom of the market, and from here we should start picking up. We said that before, but we're starting to see now with these results the first signals of this pickup. As far as we are concerned, I think this should be it, but we'd be very happy to answer any questions that would be coming from you guys. Thank you very much.
Excuse me, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question comes from Matteo Bonizzoni with Kepler. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I have one question on the chartering cost that in the first quarter were $32 million. So I tried to calculate the daily chartering cost based on the 25 ships that you declare were chartered in, and I arrived to $14,200 per day. Can you confirm that this is the average chartering cost per day? Then one question on how do you account the sale and lease back, in the sense this is not treated as a financial leasing. I want just to understand in terms of when you do the sale and lease back, you have a reduction of the net debt. Is it not, I assume, treated as a financial leasing, no? But some operating leasing. In other words, we don't see it in the net financial position as it was a financial leasing. Can you confirm that? And the third question is just to understand who, if you can provide a little bit of disclosure on the counterparties of these sale and lease back contracts. Thanks.
Massimo, I can give you the, thank you for your questions. I can answer to the first and the third partially. Third question, I think, yeah, you're correct about the number 14.2. Answer to the third question, counterparty of this financial leasing depends who's been done. We did some sale and TC back, and this has been done with the other owners. We have done some sale and lease backs, and in majority, except one that's been a Norwegian fund, has been done with the Japanese counterparts. We feel that the cost of funding, then Carlos can get more on in this discussion, can give you some further numbers, but they were very useful for the amount, very useful for very interesting for the amount, very interesting for the length, and especially from the condition, because everything we have been doing has also some purchase options. So in theory, we can always repurchase these ships on a depreciating base for a certain period of time. On the accounting treatment and a further expansion of this question, I think Carlos can help you out.
Yes, hello. On the accounting treatment on the what we call sale leaseback transactions, we are accounting them for all these transactions. We have purchase obligations at the end. They are for us financial leases, and we are accounting for the right of use of the asset and for the liability. So they are included in our net financial position. And we include the asset and we depreciate the asset over the remaining useful life of the asset. So we have a different treatment than for the right of use of the asset and for the liability, which depends on the internal rate of return of the transaction, of the cost of the financing that we are raising. But we basically treated almost like an owned vessel. On the sale time charter back transactions, these are currently treated as operating leases, and they are not capitalized. The bareboat charters on the time charters, they pass through our normal operating expenses as charter expense, and they are not capitalized. With the new IFRS rules that are going to be effective from 1st of January 2019, we are going to have to capitalize any charter obligation which has a term of more than 12 months, a residual term of more than 12 months. So that will increase the assets and the liabilities in our balance sheet. The other point I would like to stress on all the transactions we are pursuing, and in particular on the sale-leaseback transactions, we have been fortunate to have access to the Japanese market. Where we have a good name, not everybody can do deals in Japan, and not everybody can do deals in Japan at the same terms as we have been doing deals in Japan. So we were able to raise long-term financing because the three vessels, young vessels that we pursued sale lease back for transactions in Japan, they were 10-year deals. So it's very long term. I mean, we have the purchase obligation only after 10 years. And at a competitive cost of funds, even relative to our bank financing, and we are also fortunate in that respect to have competitive access to bank financing. Of course, we are paying more than our traditional bank financing, but we are financing 100% of the vessel value, so that is to be expected. But it's not too much more given the tenor of 10 years of these deals. And then the last point is that these deals are flexible deals because we have sought to structure them with a lot of purchase options. Usually we have purchase options either from the second or third anniversary. The first deal we did was from the third anniversary. Then all the other deals we did was from the second anniversary at any point in time with 3 months notice. So at decreasing purchase prices. So that means that when the market recovers as we expect, we will be able to buy back these vessels and either sell them outright or just refinance them with traditional bank debt at a lower cost. So, but it gives us the flexibility we need. So it's both competitive cost, long tenors, and flexible. So it's very attractive, I believe.
Okay, if I can just follow up, if I go to the free cash flow statement in the Q1 statement, I see 61 million of cash out for CapEx, let's say, 41 million of cash in from the disposal of, let's say, assets. So how can I match this with the CapEx that you've done and the 20.3 million cash proceeds that you say you had from the sale and lease back and the sales time charter back, just to for modeling purpose, I mean, how I can match this this figure?
No, on the... Not sure and I follow your question, sorry, but I mean, it's...
Sorry, Matteo, how we reconcile the amount...
The free cash flow statement in Q1 that I find on your website says, on one side, $61 million of cash out for CapEx, on the other side, $41 million of cash in for disposal. And then I have the CapEx that, if I'm right, you say were 30 million something, plus the cash in of $20 million from the sale and lease back and sale time charter back that is on the slide 4. So that just to understand a little bit the matching of the two.
Yeah, no, the reason we show the investments as a 61, it's because it's the 33 million in actual investments we had in the quarter.
Okay.
On installments and for the delivery of the first LR1, and it's 28 million in investment, which is the acquisition of the right of use asset, but which is actually not an investment. I mean, it's but from an accounting purpose, it is as though we sold a vessel and then we acquired the right of use.
Okay.
So we have both the proceeds for the sale of the vessel of 28 million, And also an investment of 28 million for the same amount for the right of use asset that we bought.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we have on the financing side, we have the inception of the financial lease. We have the 28 million which comes in as new cash as inception of financial lease. Mm-hmm. So it is a bit confusing, but you see it twice on the investment cash flow, and also you see it on the financing cash flow.
Okay.
And then of course we have the reimbursement of the old loan on the financing cash flow.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
The next question comes from Luigi Dabellis with Equita SIM. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Three quick questions for me. The first one, do you think that the increase in scrap price can accelerate the scrapping activity in the sector? The second question, do you think the recovery of the market in the next quarters will arrive mainly from a more balanced supply side or from an increase of the demand, the new refinery capacity going online? And the last question, how do you see second quarter spot rates as of today? Thank you.
Luigi, I'll get your questions. Scrap price, for sure the scrap price has been one of the things that's been pushing the scrapping of these, the acceleration of the scrapping. For two main reasons. One has been that there was more value, and the second reason is that the market was not doing very well. So to answer in a nutshell to your question, yes, I believe that if scrap price continues to stay high, that's going to be an incentive. As a matter of fact, as you have seen, in Q1 we have scrapped almost over 50% of what's been scrapped all of last year. So this trend could continue. Second question was the recovery. Recovery, I think, will be mainly due to lower deliveries and to increase in throughput from refineries, especially now that the overhaul season has been terminating. The market has been holding kind of resilient, because normally this period has been kind of weaker. Instead, we have seen a certain resiliency of the market, a little bit of an uptick. So I think that for sure there's going to be some evolution in the Q2. As far as Q2 rates, I think that it won't be, you know, shooting up 13 and then Q2 is going to be 19. But for sure there's been a little bit of improvement. March number were not, sorry, April numbers were not spectacular, but were in line more or less with March. And going forward, I think there should be a slowly strengthening up of the whole situation. I think at the year end, the average of the year of this year on the month, and I'm talking about the month because it's the ship that we have most of them, I think we could see something in bracket between 13 and 15,000 average dollar per day, plus or minus 2,000, so inside that bracket. With concentration of the rates towards the second half of the year, but at a certain point has to pick up. Second half of the year, then we have 2019, where we're going to start to see some effects of the 2020 regulation. There's going to be already a lot of hiccups in the distribution, demand for products everywhere. So I think beginning of 2019, the market is going to be very much defined by the January 1st, 2020 regulation being implemented.
Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, listen, thank you very much. I've noticed that on this conference call there are a lot of the banks we work with, so a special thanks to all of you for your support. We really appreciate it. And for everybody else, I think rendezvous for Q2 results and I hope the news are going to be better. But you know, from what it was Q4, that was kind of one of the worst quarters of last year, I feel we have been a little bit digging ourselves out of the hole where we were last year. So this is a move, at least was a move in the right direction. Thank you very much, and we're always available for any kind of questions, also if you want to call us or write to us. Thank you, and talk to you soon. Bye-bye.